cold wind blows through a ruined landscape. It is morning, but none of the few who survived are able to tell night from day anymore. Where once a verdant forest would have soaked up the light of the sun, alive with the calls and chatter of thousands of creatures, now there is only quiet darkness and the crackling of distant flame. The forest is gone, and in its place is a barren wasteland. Several months have passed since the asteroid hit, and wildfires continue to ravage the surface. Their fiery haze is the only light in the omnipresent darkness, for the dust and debris in the atmosphere has reduced the sun to little more than a cold, distant light in the sky. The surface of the Earth will not feel its life-giving warmth for several more years. Death and decay is rife. Some of the mightiest species to have ever lived now lie defeated by starvation, and opportunistic scavengers bicker over their emaciated remains. But amid this devastation, an unassuming little creature scurries by, unnoticed by the larger animals. She is tiny, no bigger than 6 inches long, but she is a survivor. While many of the scavengers around her will perish as soon as the recent surplus of dead herbivores runs out, she will live on. For a new age is dawning, and it is time for the small animals of this earth to emerge from the shadows and take their place atop its hierarchy. The Cretaceous-Paleogene mass extinction event, or the end of the world as it had been up until then, wiped out 3/4 of all life, but a few small survivors clung on, and it is their descendants that will inherit the Earth. In the millions of years following this mass extinction, one group in particular will rise to prominence. The mammals will go from being relatively small, unremarkable creatures living in the shadows of the terrible lizards, to a diverse class of adaptable animals that would eventually colonize the wealth of niches left behind by their disappearance. Mammals would take to the skies, the seas, and everywhere in between, some remaining small, others growing to enormous sizes. Where once there had been terrifying mosasaurs lurking in the depths of the oceans, soon there would be huge archaic whales like Basilosaurus. Where once there were long-necked sauropods browsing the leaves of the tallest trees, soon there would be enormous mammals like the 14-ton straight-tusked elephant. And among these trees, a distinctly intriguing group of mammals will thrive. And in less than half the time it took for the dinosaurs to rise and fall, these tiny tree dwellers will come to overtake the entire globe. But none of this would have been possible if it had not been for that fateful day 66 million years ago. So just how did our resilient little ancestors survive the end of the world? How far back can you trace your ancestors? Perhaps you learnt about your great-great-grandparents through family stories or consulted official records and family trees. However, it is unlikely you will be able to find out much about your direct ancestors any earlier than perhaps the Victorian era, when many of our great-great-great-grandparents would have seen the invention of a variety of things we take for granted today. But what about ancestors who lived even further back? Archaeological research has shown that our 1,600th great-grandparents shared the planet with another species of human, the Neanderthals. And genome sequencing has shown that some of our great-grandparents even had children with them. Our 700,000th great-grandparents were covered in hair and walked on 4 legs while being stalked by saber-toothed cats and hell pigs the size of horses. And our 2.6 millionth great-grandparents breathed the same air as the dinosaurs. But who were they, really? The year is 2012. Two paleontologists, Stephen Chester and Jonathan Block, were looking through a collection of unidentified bones which had been stored in museum trays when they found a number of little fossils that looked a good deal like those belonging to a tiny primate. Though it may sound surprising, it's not uncommon for a new discovery to be made when someone actually takes the time to rummage through forgotten museum stores. In 2019 alone, some 412 new species, both extinct and living, were discovered by museum scientists. But this was something special, for Chester and Block had actually recovered the ankle bones of Purgatorius, a candidate for our earliest primate ancestor yet found. Primates are a large group of mammals that contain not only us, but the rest of our great ape cousins, and also other animals like lemurs and bush babies. Many primates have larger brains, longer lifespans, and complex social groups. But despite these clear commonalities, the search for the first primate is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Because early primates, as is the case with most primitive mammals, were very small. Their remains do not preserve well in the fossil record, and they can be near impossible to find. In fact, before modern excavation techniques were widely adopted, it is likely that many thousands of early mammal fossils were overlooked or even thrown away. The scientists spent many hours painstakingly poring over the little bones, and based on their morphology, were able to conclude that Purgatorius would have had very mobile ankles, a feature associated with arboreal, tree-dwelling animals like many modern monkeys. This would have allowed Purgatorius to rotate and adjust its feet to grab branches while moving through trees, a distinctively primate feature. But this wasn't the first time that scientists had discovered Purgatorius fossils. Back in the 1960s, a few tiny teeth from Macon County, Montana, provided the type fossils for the Purgatorius genus. When the research was published in 1965, the authors referred to Purgatorius as the first primate, but with only a few teeth to go off, not much could really be said about what the animals would have really been like. Their tiny teeth were sufficient to tell the researchers that Purgatorius was about the size of a rat, and that it probably would have eaten a diet of insects and plants, but anything else, including whether they lived in the trees like many modern primates do, remained a mystery until 2012. Despite these discoveries, there is still some controversy in claiming Purgatorius as one of humanity's earliest primate ancestors. But even so, the genus provides us with a good guess of what these ancestors might have been like. They were small, tree-dwelling, and ate insects and plants, but what else can we say about them? It was always known that Purgatorius was much older than any other primate-like animals that had ever been discovered, but until recently, no one knew precisely how old the genus really was. However, a 2021 study found that Purgatorius lived within 105 to 139,000 years of the extinction event that killed all the non-avian dinosaurs. While we don't have any direct fossil evidence that Purgatorius would have evolved before this point, it's quite easy to imagine that Purgatorius lived during the final part of the Cretaceous. And so, in a lush forest inhabited by fearsome Tyrannosaurus rex, our distant ancestors could have dashed about the branches overhead, munching on little fruit and chasing insects. Indeed, perhaps it was in such a forest, on the North American continent, that our human story began. But of course, things were about to change. The millipede is winding its way along a high branch of a neighboring tree. Purgatorius watches, completely unmoving, and waits for the precise moment with which to make her attack. To most other animals, the arthropod would be almost invisible against the dark wood, but Purgatorius has no trouble picking out the distinctive movement of its segmented body and many scuttling legs. It is bigger than her, as many of the ancient arthropods in the forest are. Ordinarily, she would not attempt to make prey of such a large creature, but Purgatorius has hungry mouths to feed. A millipede will offer an excellent source of protein for her growing babies, and for her as well, if she manages to kill it. She is a nimble little creature, no bigger than 6 inches long and covered in soft, red-brown fur. Her strong legs, mobile ankles, and dexterous hands are made for climbing, and although her sense of smell is not as strong as some of the animals she shares her environment with, Purgatorius's excellent eyesight and keen sense of hearing more than make up for it. Below her, a herd of long-necked Camarasaurus are making their way through the forest. With enormous appetites to match their enormous bodies, the sauropods have already stripped away much of the vegetation in the area, so now they must move on and continue their eternal journey to find new sources of food. Trampling through the underbrush, their heavy footfalls cause small tremors to reverberate through the entire patch of forest. But Purgatorius is not alarmed. She is used to sauropods, and she knows that they will do her no harm, so long as she stays well clear of their crushing feet and whip-like tails. It is the smaller, more agile dinosaurs that she needs to watch out for. The ones with bright feathers, retractable claws, and sharp teeth. She catches the millipede unawares and kills it as quickly as she can. Her young are maturing rapidly and are becoming bolder and more adventurous every day, so she doesn't want to leave them unsupervised for long. Much larger animals than Purgatorius live in these trees, and she has already lost her mate to the sharp teeth of a pterosaur, so she knows to be on her guard. The hunt has tired her, however, so she allows herself a pause for just a moment. Perched in the highest reaches of the tree, she catches her breath and gazes with shining black eyes up at the heavens. And that is when she sees it again. The new light that appeared in the sky a few weeks ago now shines brightly enough to bathe the twilight in a strange white glow. It seems bigger than it did the last time she saw it too, almost like another moon. But she doesn't think anything of it. She has young to care for, and she hurries back down through the canopy to bring them their meal. Like every other animal on the planet, she won't realize until it is too late. For the light in the sky is no moon. It is Doom coming from space, an asteroid measuring 12 kilometers across, a gray, glistening mass of carbonaceous chondrites on a collision course with what is now the Yucatan Peninsula in eastern Mexico. Roughly twice the size of Mount Kilimanjaro, it is now just 24 hours from impact. The very instant the asteroid touches the surface of our planet, ecosystems that have been supporting life for hundreds of millions of years immediately will begin to fall apart. The resulting extinction event will be so devastating that it will bring an end to the Cretaceous and usher in a whole new age, the Cenozoic. The Cretaceous had been the longest period of the entire Phanerozoic eon, and a time that had seen the diversification of life on a hitherto unprecedented scale. Most likely facilitated by the generally warm temperatures and moist climate of the time, there were no ice caps at the poles during it, and verdant forests stretched across almost every part of the globe. Life may have also been prompted to diversify by the breakup of the supercontinent Pangaea, which had begun during the Jurassic. By the mid-Cretaceous, Pangaea had become several smaller continents, creating large-scale geographic isolation for the flora and fauna on the northern and southern landmasses, leading to greater variation and diversity of life. Soon, however, much of this incredible diversity would be lost. The asteroid impact makes it a very bad time to be big, and there were a lot of big animals in the Cretaceous. No land-dwelling animal that weighed more than 25 kilograms survived the apocalypse, and many smaller animals too met their end. It was to be an extinction event on a scale not seen for 150 million years. But how did this singular asteroid impact cause the extinction of so much life? Indeed, just how could a localized impact event lead to the destruction of ecosystems on the other side of the globe? And what was it, aside from just being small, that allowed our ancestors to live through one of the deadliest extinction events in all history? At breakfast time, I was sitting by the house at Vannevara Trading Post. I suddenly saw that directly to the north, the sky split in two and fire appeared high and wide over the forest. The split in the sky grew larger and the entire northern side was covered with fire. At that moment, I became so hot that I couldn't bear it, as if my shirt was on fire. I wanted to tear off my shirt and throw it down. But then, the sky shut closed, and a strong thump sounded, and I was thrown a few meters. After that, such a noise came, as if rocks were falling or cannons were firing. The earth shook, and when I was on the ground, I pressed my head down, fearing rocks would smash it. Hot wind raced between the houses. Later, we saw that many windows were shattered. On the morning of the 30th of June, 1908, near the Tunguska River in Siberia, an asteroid fell from the sky. At approximately 7:17 a.m., a rock measuring between 48 and 60 meters in size exploded in the air, causing the destruction of over 1,300 kilometers of forest and the deaths of at least three people. The resulting 12-megaton blast produced a shockwave that was so strong it resembled an earthquake, shattering windows and knocking people off their feet. Thankfully, the explosion took place in a sparsely populated area, or the damage could have been much, much worse. But even so, the Tunguska event is still considered the largest asteroid impact event in recorded human history. Geology, however, reveals the scars of far larger impacts in our planet's past. The biggest impact feature on Earth is located in Free State, South Africa. Known as the Vredefort Crater, it could measure up to 300 kilometers in diameter and was created by an asteroid impact some 2 billion years ago. This was before complex life had even evolved, when the Earth was a totally different place, a world of vast, empty oceans, only a few scraps of land peeking out from beneath the waves. And so the damage done by the Vredefort asteroid would have been minimal compared to other, more geologically recent impacts. And indeed, the last time the planet was hit by an asteroid of comparative size, it caused one of the most devastating mass extinction events of all time. The idea of a mass extinction event during the Cretaceous has been recognized by scientists for around 200 years. In 1825, French naturalist Georges Cuvier noted the significant changes in fossil biodiversity between the end of the Mesozoic, which ended with the Cretaceous, and the early Cenozoic, which is the geologic period we are in now. In 1831, Gideon Mantell, a geologist and paleontologist, coined the terms Age of Reptiles for the Mesozoic and Age of Mammals for the Cenozoic. For Cuvier and Mantell, this pronounced change, from a fossil record abundant in dinosaurs, pterosaurs, and big marine reptiles, to one in which they were suddenly replaced by birds and mammals, was clear evidence that something big had happened at the end of the Cretaceous. There was, however, no widely accepted explanation for what could have caused such a change. Throughout the 20th century, researchers were increasingly convinced that a sudden, catastrophic event must have been responsible for the disappearance of the kind of flora and fauna that had been abundant during the Cretaceous, but nobody could pinpoint the exact cause. That is, until two geophysicists made a unique discovery in the Gulf of Mexico. And our understanding of the history of our planet was drastically changed. It was the late 1970s, and Glenn Penfield and Antonio Camargo were conducting an airborne survey for Petróleos Mexicanos in search of possible locations for oil drilling. Penfield had noted anomalies in the magnetic data that he and Camargo had collected, which, to him, demonstrated very clearly the presence of a huge impact feature below them. In other words, they had found a giant crater buried beneath the Gulf of Mexico. The two scientists shared their findings with Petróleos Mexicanos, but the oil company forbade them from publishing their data, and so the existence of the crater remained a mystery to the wider public. But just a couple of years later, a team of scientists started reporting unusually high concentrations of iridium in rocks from the end of the Cretaceous, called the KPG boundary. This team was led by the legendary bespectacled father and son duo, Nobel Prize winning physicist Luis Alvarez and his son, Walter. They had been digging at multiple locations, including in Italy, Denmark, and New Zealand, and each place had the same story to tell. Around 66 million years ago, the Earth suddenly saw an influx of a very rare chemical element, iridium. A hard and brittle metal resembling platinum, it occurs naturally in minuscule quantities in the Earth's crust, but is rare on the surface of the planet. Somewhere that does have a natural abundance of iridium, though, is meteorites. And this led the team to speculate that the high levels of iridium at the KPG boundary could be extraterrestrial in origin. Understandably, this made the researchers very excited, and in 1980, they published a paper in which they suggested that a huge asteroid impact could have been the cause of the Cretaceous mass extinction event. This idea became known as the Alvarez hypothesis, after Lewis and Walter, and it created a spike of interest in locating the impact site. Penfield even wrote to Walter Alvarez after he read the 1980 research paper, but for whatever reason, he received no response. In the end, it took until 1990 for rocks to be analyzed from the site, and when they finally were, it was clear. Walter Alvarez would write, "It was a bombshell. The crater of doom was found at last." This crater, which was named for the nearby town of Chicxulub, is now recognized as the second largest impact feature on Earth, only just exceeded in size by the Vredefort crater in South Africa. And so the final piece of the puzzle fell into place, and the Alvarez hypothesis was solidified as the leading cause of the KPG extinction event. Scientific analysis of the buried Chicxulub crater has since revealed that it probably measures at least 180 kilometers in diameter, scientists believing the asteroid itself to have been about 10 kilometers wide. And it defies imagination to think of what it must have been like for those who witnessed this earth-shattering event. Traveling at around 20 kilometers a second, scarcely any time would have passed before doom slammed into Earth, and any animals that were unfortunate enough to be within a 1,450 kilometer radius of the crater likely would not have even had time to process what was happening, let alone attempt to flee before they were vaporized. But perhaps they were the lucky ones. For animals further away from the impact, a much crueler fate was in store. While they would have escaped instantaneous death, no corner of the planet was spared in the apocalypse. Many of their habitats were swiftly destroyed as 70% of the world's forest were enveloped in wildfires, when blazing fragments of rock rained down from the sky. These are called tektites, and they are formed when asteroids collide with the surface of a planet, melting solid rock and ejecting it into the atmosphere. They then fall back down to Earth, almost like little asteroids of their own. Many animals that were too large to find shelter likely would have been hit by these deadly balls of rock, while smaller animals darted for cover to escape the deadly rain. Anything that escaped the flames and the tektites then had to suffer through massive earthquakes that shook the planet for weeks after the impact. And these weren't just average tremors, they were literally off the scale. Modern seismologists use the Richter scale to measure the severity of earthquakes, with magnitude 1 being the micro-earthquakes that happen continuously without our notice, and magnitude 9 or higher being the worst earthquakes in recorded history. The earthquakes resulting from the asteroid collision 66 million years ago could have measured up to a magnitude of 12. The sudden surge in seismic activity would have also created mega-tsunamis taller than London's Big Ben, which would have battered ecosystems and drowned flora and fauna right the way across the globe. Volcanic eruptions were also triggered, releasing deadly lava, pyroclastic flows, and suffocating quantities of ash and poisonous gas. and yet this was just the beginning. Even though so much destruction had already been brought down, the apocalypse was nowhere near finished. Researchers revealed that the rock around the Chicxulub crater is naturally high in sulfur, so when the asteroid crashed into the Yucatan Peninsula, the gas from these rocks was released into the atmosphere. A small amount of sulfur in the atmosphere is not usually an issue, but so much of it was released by the impact, it caused acid rain, which poisoned the oceans, and then brought on global cooling. Compounding this was all the dust, debris, and ash that had become trapped in the atmosphere. It was so dense that even the sun could barely shine through, and so, not only did global temperatures fall, but any plants that relied on bright sunlight for photosynthesis soon withered and died. In North America alone, an estimated 57% of plant species went extinct. This had a knock-on effect for the animals as well. Soon enough, all the large herbivores that had evolved in times of warmth and plenty found themselves in a world without food, and when they succumbed to starvation, so too did the carnivores. It is clear from paleontological and geological evidence that, in just one day, the Earth was changed from a forested paradise with rich biodiversity to an almost inhospitable wasteland with acidified oceans. Indeed, scientists now believe that the long-term effects of the asteroid impact were the most deadly. Up to 90% of primary producers like plankton were wiped out, meaning animals further up the food chain inevitably suffered. Even if they managed to make it through everything else, in the end, many simply starved to death. But despite the horrors of that day and those following, this wasn't the end for life on Earth. Even though only a quarter made it through, everything that is alive today has an ancestor that survived the KPG extinction. From tiny insects to huge whales, our planet is populated by the descendants of a small group of tenacious survivors like us. Six hundred years ago, the last Haast's eagle took its final shallow breath. Its prey, the flightless moa, had gone extinct, and now the largest eagle to ever soar through the skies had been defeated by hunger. Since the age of reptiles was brought to a catastrophic end, mammals have ruled the world. But if there were ever a place where they didn't reign quite so supreme, it was New Zealand. Before the introduction of terrestrial mammals by the Maori, the only mammals on the islands of New Zealand were a few species of bats. In the place of grazers like deer, giraffe, or horses, there were flightless moa birds. Instead of small mammals like rodents, there were little kiwis rummaging through the leaf litter and tall grass. And instead of wolves or big cats, there were Haast's eagles. They were the apex predators of their environments, top of the food chain. But a new predator was to invade their domain. Humans settled on the islands of New Zealand around the turn of the 14th century, and with their sophisticated weapons and group hunting strategy, the eagles stood little chance. Within 200 years, these interlopers had hunted most of the medium and large flightless birds, including the moa, to extinction. And so the starved eagles soon followed. The story of the Haast's eagle is the animal kingdom equivalent of putting all your eggs in one basket. It demonstrates the dangers of relying too heavily on one resource. Indeed, in nature, being overly specialized is a particularly risky business. Not only had the eagles hunted the moa, they had a complex predator-prey relationship with them. Everything, even the size of the eagles, had evolved in tandem with the moa. Without them, the eagles simply couldn't survive. And so, while large, specialist species like the Haast's eagle may be successful in the short term, research continuously shows that it is the generalists, species that can adapt to exploit a range of resources, which enjoy the greatest longevity. And this was never more true than during the Cretaceous-Paleogene mass extinction event. Our ancestor, whether it was purgatorious or not, had evolved in the warmth and bounty of the late Cretaceous. Though undoubtedly preyed upon by many larger animals, they would also not be lacking ample food or mating opportunities. It was by no means an easy existence, with many of them likely dying young. But compared to the hardships they faced during the asteroid impact and the subsequent mass extinction event, the late Cretaceous was a veritable paradise. When the asteroid collided with our planet, our ancestors were suddenly plunged into a cold, dark world, a place where many of the species they had once shared their habitats with were swiftly disappearing. Overnight, the lush ecosystems of the late Cretaceous became hostile to the animals that had always lived in them. But somehow, our ancestors survived, and their ability to adapt was key. It is thought that any of the animals that survived the extinction would have been capable of certain survival strategies, like burrowing, swimming, and making nests. They were also small, and so when required would be able to adapt their behaviors in order to feed on pretty much anything that was available. Altogether, these features and abilities allowed animals like our ancestors to shelter themselves from the worst effects of the asteroid impact, including the plummeting temperatures. By burrowing or swimming, the survivors of the extinction would also have been able to tap into new sources of food, such as fish and fossorial insects. But our ancestors were likely accustomed to a life in the trees and a diet of insects and plants. So how could they adapt themselves to a world without plants of any kind? Indeed, evidence suggests that plant life would not return to Earth's ecosystems for several years after the asteroid impact. And full, canopied forests, like the ones Purgatorius most likely evolved in, would not recover for at least 5,000 years. For animals like our ancestors, this must have been a lot to adapt to. And yet, adapt they did. Fossils indicate that the first plants to recolonize the land were ferns. But in the intervening decade or so, there was a huge proliferation of fungi. Since fungi do not draw energy from photosynthesis, many fungal species were unperturbed by the decrease in sunlight and were able to become much more widespread. Now their plant competition was out of the picture. While this sudden influx of fungi would have created a strange, almost alien-looking world, it also would have provided a vital source of nutrition. A lifeline for the animals that were trying to eke out a living on post-apocalyptic Earth. And finally, perhaps we didn't just stay in the trees. Even if our ancestors were adapted to an arboreal lifestyle, to survive they must have been flexible enough in their behavior to venture onto the ground when necessary. Perhaps they behaved like modern squirrels, preferring to spend their time in the trees but sometimes coming down to the ground to look for food. Maybe they were able to escape the forest fires in the weeks following the asteroid impact by finding cover underground or in naturally occurring caves and rock shelters. Given that they were most likely arboreal, it is probable that they were already capable of building nests, and these would have provided them with warmth and safety when the temperatures began to cool. They may also have been able to swim, as many modern primates can, which would have allowed them to exploit aquatic resources. Indeed, evidence suggests that freshwater ecosystems were not as severely impacted by the asteroid impact as saltwater or terrestrial, so maybe our ancestors were able to venture underwater in search of fish, aquatic insects, and freshwater mollusks. Whatever their particular survival strategy, it's all thanks to this adaptability of our ancestors that we are even here today. And while the KPG mass extinction event was by no means the biggest of all time, it was a pivotal one for the balance of life on the planet. And so, this raises the question. If there hadn't been an asteroid impact 66 million years ago, might the age of reptiles never have ended? If there had been no mass extinction at the end of the Cretaceous, would humans ever have evolved? It is easy to imagine evolution as a constant, an even progression crawling through the millennia measured as a metronome. But sometimes, this is very far from reality. Sometimes, evolution can explode. In the first few million years after the extinction event, mammals evolved into a wider variety of forms than they had over the previous 160 million. With the sudden absence of the great lizards that had ruled the planet, mammals could race into shapes and sizes never seen before within their class, taking advantage of empty ecological niches that arose in a world totally remade. For from the ashes of the Cretaceous, a strange new Eden had emerged. The Paleocene. Ravaged ecosystems were still healing, and although worldwide biodiversity was low, a plethora of new mammalian forms appeared. Paramus, the rodent, ancient armadillo Euteutus, and Osepia, the oldest known twig from the mammalian branch that grew into aardvarks, sea cows, and elephants. Fearsome, dinosaur-eating Reponomimus had been the largest mammal of the Mesozoic at 3 feet long. But in the Paleocene lived Barry Lambda, an 8-foot-long ground sloth-like creature with huge hind legs and an unusually large tail. Eobasileus cornutus, the horned Dawn King, stood at 7 foot tall, its six-horned skull as long as Reponomimus's entire body. And it was not just the herbivores. Just as the Rocky Mountains were forming, wolf-like ankalagons stalked the forests of North America, some of them growing to the size of bears. And so, the entire epoch passes. Larger mammals have staked their claims along with 300-pound birds and 43-foot snakes. But what about us? 12 million years after the Cretaceous mass extinction event, a pair of luminous eyes gaze down from amongst the leaves of a tree. The owner of these marble-like eyes is a tiny, ball-shaped animal that is clinging to a slender branch. It is an Archosebus, a diminutive member of a new group of primates, the descendants of which will eventually take over the world. Dwelling in the early Eocene, 55 million years ago, the asteroid impact that almost destroyed all life on the planet is distant history. Only the city-sized crater remains in what will become the Gulf of Mexico. The days are warm and humid, and tropical forests reach much further from the equator than they do today. Fossils of tropical plant species have been found as far north as Greenland and Alaska, making this greenhouse planet the perfect place for primates to thrive. They have spread far and wide, and can be seen scampering amongst the branches in the forests of North America, Africa, Europe, and Asia. Like many of the animals they share this tropical Eden with, the primates of this time are generally small. While they are certainly a successful group of mammals and are diversifying rapidly, it will not be until much later that the world will be home to larger genera, akin to today's apes and baboons. This may be because the hot conditions of the Eocene are more favourable for small animals, although a number of megafauna call the Eocene Earth home too, such as the rhino-esque Uintatheres and Brontatheres, both of which include species that weigh over a ton. Discovered in China and described in the journal Nature in 2013, Archosebus is of particular interest to scientists because it's one of the oldest representatives of the Haplorhine primate group, and could therefore be the last common ancestor of all modern members of the lineage. A lineage that includes tarsiers, monkeys, apes, and humans. But Archosebus was tiny, more akin to modern tarsiers than any monkeys or apes we see today, and while its descendants would be capable of great feats of intelligence, it is likely that the eyes were bigger than its brain. Great apes, including humans, are some of the most intelligent animals on the planet, but it would seem that we had very humble beginnings indeed. And though our bodies would never catch up to the size of Eocene megafauna, When was it that our brains first showed a glimmer of potential for world domination? Another epoch passes. As the Eocene turns to the Oligocene, mammals have grown larger and more fearsome than ever before. But they are also facing their toughest challenge since their ancestors struggled to survive in the post-apocalyptic conditions of the early Paleocene. Lasting from roughly 34 to 23 million years ago, it is a time of transition, with the ancient environmental and climatic conditions that characterized previous epochs being replaced by conditions more similar to those we are familiar with today. Temperatures have plummeted since the days of the Paleocene and Eocene, turning the world from a greenhouse to an ice house. For the first time in hundreds of millions of years, there is ice at the poles, and the land is becoming drier. As a result, forests are retreating and grass and shrublands are creeping in to take their place. For animals that evolved in the warm, moist, forested environments of the preceding epochs, things have suddenly become much tougher. The fate of mammals is uncertain. And it is in this time that many of the survivors become only semi-alien to our eyes. Primitive, three-toed horses, rhinos, and camels arise. Craodonts ruled as the dominant carnivores for tens of millions of years, but begin to lose their place to the carnivorous ancestors of dogs and bears. However, some mammals remain truly bizarre. Terrifying, enigmatic Andrewsarchus, the largest of all mammalian land predators, wielded huge, elongated jaws. And in the grasslands of Eurasia, walking amongst the earliest deer, giraffes, pigs, and cattle, is a mammal that rivals the dinosaurs in size. Hornless, rhino-like giant Paraceratherium, weighing a massive 20 tons, is the biggest land mammal that has ever lived. And so just where, then, in this increasingly grass-covered world, are the embers of our primate intelligence? The Oligocene became the Miocene, and 17 million years ago, a curious group of primates sat on the ground, picking through the leaf litter for fallen fruits and seeds. Like all past primates, they are tree dwellers, but their quadrupedal walking style of locomotion makes it easy for them to come down to the ground in search of an easy meal. Scientists would later name these animals Proconsul, and they are some of the oldest known ape-like creatures ever to walk the Earth. While they are much larger than their miniature ancestors, with some members of this genus reaching the size of a female gorilla, they still have much to fear from the predators they share their environments with. When a bone-crushing Megastotherium is spotted making its way towards the group, a Proconsul sentinel lets out a warning cry, and the primates quickly hasten back into the trees where the predator cannot follow. Proconsul find comfort and safety amongst others of their own kind, but unlike their ancestors of previous eons, they have brains that are larger than would be expected for animals of their size. It is perhaps here, with this early ape-like primate, that the trend towards large brains and increased intelligence would begin. Indeed, many features found in Proconsul, including their large brains, absence of tails, and complex social lives, seem to hint at the evolutionary direction apes will take. And so the sparks are alight in our ancestors' brains, but they are still far from the top of the pecking order. They are outmatched by the size, teeth, and claws of the Miocene predators. It will take another, unique development to open the doors to the weapons that could turn the tables. 10 million years pass. The Miocene sees the emergence of ancient hyenas and iconic saber-toothed cats. But in many ways, this time is the epoch of the apes. Only a few ape species live today, but in the Miocene, there may have been as many as 100, ranging across Europe, Asia, and Africa. They evolved body and brain, allowing many of them to deal with varied environments and more complex ecological problems. And then, around 7 million years ago, a very different ape arises. It is morning, and the sun is rising over the deep blue waters of Lake Chad. From the tree line, a group of apes emerge to quench their thirst at the water's edge. A youngster breaks away from her mother's side, curious to explore her new surroundings. Crouching in the shallows, she plunges her eager hands into the lake's soft sediment, revealing all manner of treasures. Freshwater snails, with shells that curl and twist in shapes she's never seen before, tiny darting fish and aquatic insects that startle out from under pebbles. A small brown crab catches her eye, and she reaches out a finger to touch it. A sharp pincer snaps back at her, and the child leaps to her feet in alarm, racing off on two short legs, back to the safety of her mother's arms. She is a kind of ape known as Sahelanthropus tridensis, and her kind may be the earliest recognizable members of the human lineage. It will only be another 6.5 million years, the blink of an eye in evolutionary terms, before the hands of the descendants of this very ape, or ones similar to her, will be holding spears, finally turning the tables on the sorts of predators that preyed on primates, epoch after epoch. And so the descendants of these new, unique primates will go on to build cities, create art and written language, and establish complex belief systems. They will spread to all corners of the globe, erect skyscrapers, and construct supercomputers. They will even conquer the skies, like the pterosaurs of old. But none of this would have been possible if not for that fateful day in the Cretaceous, and our diminutive ancestors surviving the wasteland that followed. Life may have ended for 75% of species when the asteroid hit, but for humans, it was just the beginning. You've been watching the entire history of humankind. Don't forget to like and subscribe and leave a comment to tell us what you think. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.